Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Empowering Family Caregivers on Blog Talk Radio. I am Susan Bida, your host and co-founder of eCareDiary.com. I hope you all enjoyed your 4th of July long weekend, and today is Tuesday, July 5th. It's 2 o'clock Eastern Time, and we're bringing this show to you live from New York City. The focus of our show today is about finding respite care for caregivers. I know this is a big topic for caregivers because a lot of caregivers don't realize what respite care is, and many caregivers don't know where to even find it or realize that it's even available for them. So we have a very distinguished guest, Jill Kagan, who is the Program Director of ARCH National Respite Network and Resource Center. This is a center that assists and promotes the development of quality respite and crisis care programs. Jill also serves as the chair of the National Respite Coalition. It's the policy division of the ARCH National Respite Network, and she is the facilitator of the Lifespan Respite Task Force, a coalition of national, state, and local organizations that promotes lifespan respite in national policy. She has served on several national advisory boards, including the advisory committees for the AARP Caregiver Coalition Research Project and the National Council on Disabilities Livable Communities for People with Disabilities. If anyone knows about respite, it would be Jill. Jill, welcome and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much. I'm very honored to be here today and excited.
Yes,
well.
Me too. I'm so excited that we have you to talk about respite care. So why don't we jump right into it? Tell us, what exactly is respite care?
Well, very simply, the way our organization defines it is a temporary break from the ongoing responsibilities of providing care and support to someone, usually a friend or a relative who has a disability or chronic condition, or even in the circumstances where families might be requiring some type of emergency care. It's a service that we like to think about as targeted to the family caregiver. And by family caregiver, you know, I mean not necessarily a relative. It could be a friend or neighbor, but anyone who's providing that care informally. Not only targeted to the family caregiver so that it's beneficial and safe for the care recipient as well. And you also mentioned lifespan respite, and I just wanted to define that quickly.
Yes,
before we move forward, too. But the federal government is now funding states through the Administration on Aging to establish lifespan respite programs, which are essentially statewide coordinated systems of community-based respite that will be available to all family caregivers regardless of the age or disability of the person being cared for. Mm-hmm. And we now have 24 states that are running these statewide programs, and we expect AOA to fund another 8 to 10 programs that they will announce probably by the end of the summer. So it is becoming a national movement, government support. So
it is such great news to hear. Now, how do we find out which of those 29 states have implemented this program?
On our website, archrespite.org, you can scroll down and click on Lifespan Respite Programs, and it will bring up the contact information for each program as well as a short description of what each state is involved in.
Terrific. Okay. Well, I think that's fantastic news. So if you want to check that out, visit www.archrespite.org, and there's the Lifespan Respite Network, correct?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Great. Jill, so let me ask you now, what kind of questions should caregivers ask themselves to help decide whether or not they need respite care? I know caregivers often, I think, one of the biggest issues is that they don't even identify themselves as family caregivers or, you know, the word caregiver, because they're just taking care of a parent or they're taking care of a loved one. And so maybe that's part of the issue. But in what instances would they need to really determine if they need respite care?
Well, we really like to encourage, and this is something we hope our Lifespan Respite programs will be doing with their public awareness and education campaigns, but we want families to recognize almost immediately that when they assume this caregiving role, if you're taking care of someone on a consistent basis, you know, providing their meals or helping them with bathing or dressing or doing anything for them on a consistent basis, you should try to recognize that respite is something you're going to need very soon and try to build that right into your caregiving schedule. We have found that respite is most effective when it's used very early in the caregiving experience before caregivers become stressed and overwhelmed.
Right.
Unfortunately, this isn't what usually happens because, as you said, people don't recognize themselves as caregivers or being in that role or even knowing that a service like respite does exist.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we're trying very hard to get the word out to try to get respite as early and as frequently as possible.
Right.
We're also working with a lot of caregiving groups on trying to promote the concept of caregiver assessment so that when a caregiver accompanies their loved one to the doctor or to, you know, with a case manager, that person will also recognize the role of the caregiver and will assess their needs as well, you know, and hopefully share information about respite and other support services.
You know, I want to ask you a question off of your response here now. You know, I think a lot of caregivers who are probably in the very beginning stages of caring for a family member or a loved one don't realize that over time it's going to become a lot of work and a lot of stress, as you had said.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess this is one of the reasons, one of the main reasons respite care has become such a, an important topic of discussion in elder care for caregivers because the impact of stress is so profound, as we have found in some research, correct?
Absolutely, yes. Physically and emotionally, there can be consequences.
Absolutely. I mean, I know just anecdotally or just from people who've written to us that, you know, people actually get sick even before, you know, they get even more sick or in some cases contract some illnesses while they're caregiving.
Yes,
so,
absolutely.
And a lot of this can be a result of stress. So that's
it's not just anecdotal. There's quite a bit of research at this point, too.
Yeah.
About the consequences of caregiving.
Yes, so that's why respite, that's why I think this show is, all the shows I think dedicated specifically to caregiving, I think this is one of the most important ones. So please listen in and let's talk now about the different types of adult respite care. Can you share those with us, Jill?
There are so many models out there, and people are increasingly thinking out of the box about ways to make respite more accessible and available to families. But there, you know, there's in-home services, there are out-of-home respite services, and many of these models are described in a very nice consumer-focused document that we have on our website called the ABCs of Respite.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, respite can be provided through community or faith-based programs.
Mm-hmm.
There's the Senior Companion Program that's funded by the Corporation for National and Community Service, where senior volunteers can actually provide respite for other seniors. The Veterans Administration has a broad array of respite options, including a home-based volunteer program if you qualify as a veteran through the Veterans Administration, and they're also working right now on improving more types of respite that they will be able to offer to family caregivers. Adult daycare services can provide respite. They're more frequently used, you know, to provide full-time care for caregivers who must work, but increasingly adult daycare is taking folks in on a temporary basis to provide that much-needed respite. You also have assisted living and nursing homes that are beginning to jump on the bandwagon and offering weekend or overnight type respite assistance. And, of course, you know, there are home health agencies, there are independent respite programs and providers that can provide in-home services. There are programs like Easter Seals and the Alzheimer's Association state affiliates that may offer different types of respite as well, in-home or center-based services. And, of course, through some of our new lifespan respite programs and our existing state respite coalitions, and we have state respite coalitions which are more informal groups of providers and family caregivers, they are offering vouchers to families so that families can look to their own informal support systems. I mean, they might have friends or neighbors or fellow congregants at church or synagogue or mosque who can, you know, come in and help them, and they're able to use these vouchers to provide some financial assistance to these folks to provide respite too. So there are many, many different models out there
that
would suit your particular needs at a certain time.
Sure. And now what I'm liking about what I'm hearing too is that not only are there, you know, these community and government programs, but that they're also the private, you know, nursing homes and assisted living facilities are jumping on the bandwagon. And you have a search engine now on your site called Find Respite.
Yes.
Correct?
Yes.
So that no matter what type of program it is, if you type in your state and then you select the city in your state and the type of care that you're looking for, the type of caregiving you're doing, you can find respite care programs that way.
Yes, it'll bring up, you know, a list of options. The family caregiver still needs to take the time to call those different agencies. So that can be a little bit time-consuming. We're hoping, again, that our lifespan respite programs will increasingly, as they start further down the road of implementation, will be the one-stop shop where families can call and say, I need respite. And that lifespan respite program will then, you know, ask them very specific questions about the type of respite they need, their when they need it, how they need it. And we'll be given, you know, much more direction and help with finding respite providers as well as payment sources.
Right, right. Would you say it's pretty? Some of it's free, and then some of it, obviously, I mean, is paid for. Would you say the vast majority is paid for?
Probably the majority of respite is through payment, but they're increasingly. Volunteer respite programs, faith-based programs. If you happen to qualify, you know, for Medicaid waiver in your state, your respite will be paid that way. They're usually sliding scale if you do have to pay. Lifespan respite programs may have a subsidy program to assist with payment. So there are sources of payment out there, definitely.
Terrific.
Not enough, but there are.
Yes.
There are some.
Now, tell us, how can seniors themselves qualify to receive respite for themselves?
Mm-hmm. Well, as I just mentioned, there are many, many sources of state, federal, and local private and public funding that's out there.
Mm-hmm.
Each one of them has their own pretty restrictive eligibility criteria, and it can get pretty confusing for family caregivers to try to navigate that maze of funding sources.
Right.
And again, that's where lifespan respite programs can help. But probably the largest source of federal funding is through Medicaid waivers. And just about every state now does have a waiver to assist the aging population with help in paying for respite. There are at least 30 states that do have state-funded respite programs for the aging population as well. But again, their eligibility criteria are going to vary widely, so you have to do a little research there.
Right.
There are also the local area agencies on aging mm-hmm. that are federally funded, and they administer a program called the National Family Caregiver Support Program. And that program provides some support for respite as well.
Okay. I guess my question is, so I guess if you're looking for respite care, either the senior can do it themselves or the caregiver can do it for the senior of which they are caring for. Correct?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Again, because it's typically a service for the family caregiver,
right.
It's more frequently the family caregiver that's looking for respite, but that's not always the case. and it may be the senior that actually qualifies for the service, even though the service is directed toward the family caregiver. I mean,
Got
that's
it.
Certainly true under the Medicaid waiver. It has to be the senior who qualifies, who then is eligible for respite for their family caregiver.
I see. Okay. Now, so what are some of the, I guess, most important points to remember when you're choosing a respite program or a provider?
Well, I think certainly planning ahead and having a well-trained provider is very important. There are many family caregivers who opt to do their own training because they know the person that they're caring for the best and might be in the best position to do that training. But if they don't feel comfortable doing that, that can be done either through a state agency or through the local area agency on aging or, again, through the lifespan program. But mostly, most importantly, it's looking for a good match with someone who, you know, with whom you share values and beliefs and the same ways of doing things. Families often make their choices based on special qualities they want, you know, in an individual caregiver or in a community program. But if it's center-based care, it's very important to make sure that that center, you know, is meeting state licensing or regulatory requirements and making sure they do background checks. Making sure that providers are trained, again, not only in CPR and first aid and safety issues, but also, you know, in sensitivity, you know, around cultural differences and that they're trained to be respectful of your family's needs and the person that you're caring for. And, you know, you want the providers especially to be able, to be trained to be able to handle the specific physical or behavioral needs of your loved one. Again, this may be training that you prefer to do yourself as the family caregiver or, you know, through the agency that you're working with. But it's very important to do interviews, you know, by asking open-ended questions. You can get the most information. And, of course, it's also very important to ask for work as well as character references.
Sure. Are there some procedural questions that a respite care agency needs to answer up front?
If you're talking about, you know, they need to know whether they need to be licensed or regulated.
Okay.
By whom, and licensing for respite can be very tricky. In many states, there's not a specific license or regulation that refers to respite. It might refer to an adult daycare center or a foster care home or a home health care agency. There are very few states that regulate respite specifically, so you have to be, you know, make sure you've got the right licensing and regulatory requirements that you're meeting. Again, the training issue is huge. For us, the best indicator of quality is how well trained are the providers, you know, especially in the specific needs of the population that they're serving.
Right.
And are they culturally responsive and supportive?
Right.
Again, I think it's important, too, for providers to start thinking about whether they're providing respite at times and locations that are most convenient for families that they serve.
One thing I actually wanted to just draw attention, I know that we, you know, we focus on elder care caregiving on eCare Diary, and that's the subject matter that we're, you know, addressing here on this show. But your organization actually offers respite care for a wide, diverse range of needs, correct, beyond just elder care.
It's, absolutely.
Yeah.
Family caregiving is a lifespan issue.
Yeah.
56% of folks who have family caregivers are under the age of 75. So it's a huge issue across the lifespan. So we work on promoting respite not only for the aging population, which is a tremendously important and growing need, but it is important for all family caregivers, even parents caring for children with special needs who may be doing that for many, many years.
Right. Okay, no, I just wanted to draw attention to that for a moment so that, you know, folks out there who are maybe not only caring for an elderly loved one, but maybe also, you know, a child with special needs or, you know, another family member who's not elderly but has cancer or suffering from some type of, you know, long-term disease, that your organization really serves the broad range of caregiving.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Now, let's go back now to the to respite care and the costs. What are some of the basic costs of respite care?
Well, of course, you've got the cost of the provider's time and the training that's involved with that. It depends on the level of need of the person who's in care. Some people with serious medical conditions may require more skilled care, such as nursing care, so that, of course, is going to be more expensive. On the other hand, we have seen, especially younger parents who have children with disabilities, that they, if they do the training themselves and they feel comfortable with the person who's there, it can even be a volunteer. So, you know, it depends on your own needs and your own personal family situation. For families, you know, who are using vouchers or involved in what we call participant-directed care, where they do their own hiring and firing of providers, they're able to negotiate pretty good rates, hourly rates, for and can get more respite than someone who might be going through a formal agency. And those rates can be anywhere from $15 to $25 or $35 an hour, again, depending on the level of skilled provider that you're using.
Okay. Now, turning back to elder care, and I think you touched on Medicaid before. Is respite care covered under Medicare as well?
The only way you can access respite through Medicare is if your loved one happens to be in hospice. Once they qualify for the hospice program, then you, Medicare will pay for a certain amount of respite per month.
Got it.
But Medicare is not really meant to be the place to turn to for long-term services and supports, which I think a lot of people are quite shocked to find out when they get their Medicare card. That it really doesn't cover those long-term services and supports that you might have thought it did.
And then, of course,
Medicaid will pay, but there are certain serious, fairly stringent income requirements that you have to meet in order to qualify for the Medicaid program or under a waiver program as well.
Of course, right. And your assets, and you have to have, like, a certain minimum or maximum asset level, depending on the state you're in.
Right.
Okay. So now let's turn to the respite care grants a little bit now. How can someone go about finding out if they qualify for these grants?
Again, right now it's quite a mess for families to figure out. There are some places they can go immediately. If they have a state lifespan respite program, if they live in one of those 24 states, that is the first place I would call to find out what funding sources in your state you might qualify for. If you don't have a lifespan respite program, you might have a state respite coalition, and we also have their contact information up on our website. They should be able to help you identify some funding sources. You can also, again, try your area agency on aging, which may have some funds immediately available for you for respite. And the eligibility requirements there are basically anyone over the age of 60 who's being cared for can qualify for family caregiver support. Or if it's someone with Alzheimer's or any related dementia, it doesn't matter what age the person is. They also provide some respite and family caregiver support for grandparents who are caring for grandchildren. Or grandparents or other relatives who are caring for adults with disabilities. So, your local area agency on aging is another great place to start.
So it's really about the person you're caring for, the age of the person you're caring for,
yes.
And so it's really not necessarily based on your income level.
Well, it may also be income. Some of these, like the Medicaid waiver programs, are certainly income-related.
Okay.
Area agencies on aging are supposed to give priority to low-income individuals, but they do tend to serve, you know, a broader range. But a lot of these programs are definitely income-related.
Okay. Now, well, I'm so glad, Jill, that you've been able to join us on this show and really drill down and explain how respite care programs work and the many diverse types of respite care programs out there. Tell us a little bit about ARCH now. ARCH is the, for lack of a better way to say it, overarching organization that where respite care is offered. What is the main objective of ARCH? And you've mentioned a lot of the resources. Are there other resources besides, I guess, what we've discussed that you'd like to share?
First of all, ARCH stands for Access to Respite Care and Help. So we do want family caregivers to know that it's a sign of strength to be asking for help. Our main objective is to improve every aspect of respite, access to respite, affordability issues, quality issues, availability issues, choice of respite options for families, regardless of the age or condition of the care recipient. Some of the other services that we do provide are we do have a grant, federal cooperative agreement from the Administration on Aging to continue to provide training and technical assistance to states and to local programs and to state respite coalitions and to lifespan respite grantees. And we do that through fact sheets, issue briefs, guidebooks. We have startup manuals if you're interested in starting up your own respite program. We have information to help you do that. In fact, we're about to release in the next couple of months a volunteer respite manual. Because increasingly there are many, many new volunteer respite programs that are springing up out there that are either can be offered through the faith-based community or through other community-based organizations. And that's another way for families to deal with, you know, the cost of respite. It's certainly going to be much lower cost, if not free, through those efforts. We're very excited about that volunteer respite manual. We do webinars. We'll even assist states through site visits in a limited way. We offer help to programs, respite programs, who want help with evaluating their programs. We talked about the National Respite Locator Service. And then through our National Respite Coalition, we do a lot of policy and advocacy work to promote respite at the federal and state level and to educate policymakers about the importance of respite.
What a phenomenal organization. I'm so really pleased that you've been able to join us today, Jill, and to share all this information with our audience. And I really hope that we've done our part in really getting the word out about what you offer and helping define what respite care is amongst all types of family caregivers out there. It's really been a pleasure having you on our show.
It's been very much a pleasure here, too. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Oh, you're very welcome. And I want to remind the audience that the website is www.archrespite.org, archrespite.org. Is that really one of the main areas where people can get information? Would you like to share any other, is there a phone number or...
Yes, I'm sorry we didn't. I talked too much and didn't leave time for questions, but if anyone wants to follow up after this and give me a call, they can call me directly at 703-256-2084. Our other contact information is up on the website as well.
Thank you very much, Jill, for that. I want to thank our audience for tuning in, and I invite you to join us next time on Tuesday, July 12th. 2 p.m. Eastern Time, when I will interview Dr. John Birchler, who is the co-owner of North Coast Conflict Solutions and the co-author of Elder Mediation, A New Solution to Age-Old Problems. To learn more about eCare Diary and our upcoming shows, visit ecarediary.com. Click on the blog tab and you'll see our Blog Talk radio shows, our video shows. We also offer webinars. In fact, I'd love to talk to you, Jill, about webinars and see maybe if we can collaborate on something.
Wonderful.
You can find us on social media. We're on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. And my Twitter address is eCareDiarySusan, in case you'd like to follow me and all of the activities that we're engaged in on a weekly basis. Thank you all again, and thank you very much, Jill.
Thank you, Susan.
Day.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.